I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Several weeks ago, we did a show about how Vermonters are getting in on the trend of weekly meal kit subscriptions. And some Vermont entrepreneurs are even making these prepared meal services themselves, in some cases shipping around the region or around the country. But it's not a surprise to learn that these prepared meal services are both eating into and changing the grocery store business model. So today we're going to look at what the grocery store landscape is like in Vermont. From co-ops to small independent grocery stores to big multinational chains that are implementing things like curbside delivery and more prepared foods and even in-store dining. Joining me to talk about this is Rocky Lee DeWitt, a professor of management at the Grossman School of Business at UVM. It's a pleasure to have you with us, Professor DeWitt.
Thank you so much, Jane.
Professor DeWitt is in the studio with me. Our other guest is most definitely not. On the line with us from Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam is Bill Yerda, a senior retail analyst at Boston Consulting Group. I promise Bill does know a thing or two, though, about our regional grocery industry. Bill, thanks for talking with us at midnight your time.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, Bill, I understand you have some statistics from 2017, but you think they're pretty fairly close to what might the picture look like today in terms of how many grocery stores we actually have in Vermont.
Yes. These would be sort of what you'd consider a typical grocery store. So maybe excluding some of the very smaller sized ones, but about 100, as of 2017, about 182 stores generating about $1.8 billion of revenue.
Okay, so I'm thinking about 182, 200 stores in Vermont, and you know, give or take, because things change, of course, over the course of a year. And we have things like Target that came in Chittenden County recently, which is selling groceries, and then there are always, you know, mergers and acquisitions and closures. But okay, so 251 towns, about 200 grocery stores.
So figure, 200 grocery stores, $2 billion in sales.
Okay. All right. Good. So that's a good baseline for us to think about this. And when I know that there are statistics in terms of what is actually considered in that number for when the, you know, when the services are trying to figure out exactly how many grocery stores we have. But more generally speaking, Rocky Lee DeWitt, how do we think of what a grocery store is sort of as consumers? Because, you know, I can drive by my general store in town and pick up ketchup and hot dog buns and milk, or I can go to my local independent, which is about 20 minutes away from my house, and I can get good meat there. They have a really good meat section. And I can get, you know, if I need orange juice, if I need to get things for the work week. I could, although I'm usually not prepared enough to go into what counts as suburbia in Vermont to go to a big box chain and get cheaper staples that might last me a week or a month. So how do we as consumers sort of think about the grocery store landscape?
I think there are two main factors that enter into how we think about grocery stores. One is I'm busy, it's convenient, and I have a very focused set of items that I am seeking to access, right? So your description of I need this, I need that, I need the other thing, it's proximate to me, I'm good, right? The other aspect of what we look at in grocery stores is something that's changed over the course of my lifetime, and that is just the whole notion of, is it somebody who only has meat and vegetables and some canned goods to the hypermarket kind of concept, right? Like a Target where I can get underwear and I can get celery at the same time.
Right. It's a strange new world.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of different kinds of grocery stores. And of course, part of that is consumer demand. And Bill Yerda, do you think grocery stores in general are sort of responsive to consumer demand, or is it an industry that's actually innovative in sort of creating that demand in consumers?
Oh, that's a good question and a good distinction. I hate to equivocate here, but I do think it's a little bit of both. I do think there is some creation of consumer demand. I think some of the digital innovations that we're seeing and things like click and collect or home delivery weren't necessarily dreamed up by consumers, but once, and in fact, grocery stores are having trouble generating profitability from some of these initiatives. But now that the genie's out of the bottle, and many customers expect it, increasingly grocery stores have to provide those kinds of services. On the other hand, I do think consumers are driving a lot of the change that we're seeing. And I think one major change that we're seeing driven by consumers is the focus on health and local produce, organic produce. That's just, when I was growing up, that was not really a priority. And now, as you mentioned earlier in the show, we're seeing co-ops, we're seeing health-oriented, independent markets, farmers markets. And I do think that's really in response to customer demand.
Professor DeWitt, do you agree that in some cases consumer demand is really driving the changes that we're seeing in grocery stores?
Yes, and I think that's always been the case. So if you take your local grocer, the conversation was often, hey, can you get me some lamb shanks? All right, so all of a sudden now you put lamb shanks on the shelf and people will say, oh, I can get that here. I think the other piece is that we are just more pressured for time. And that's caused changes in the hours of operation. It's caused changes in the extent to which households will inventory basic goods and hence make the trip to Costco. I think also that... you know, we have families that are of different sizes and shapes than we used to have. And so the whole notion of, like, what the shopping experience needs to be has changed.
How so? Give me an example of that.
My generation, the notion that my mother would have taken me to the grocery store with her was kind of like a disciplinary moment, right? But now I walk into the grocery store and they have carts that are designed
look like race cars.
Like race cars or a fire engine. And it's not uncommon to see people with their families in tow shopping. All right. So that's changed kind of the nature of how you run the store. I think another thing that's changed is just the whole idea that you would have a dining experience at your grocery store is just novel, right? It was, the idea was that you went and got groceries and then did something about the meal. But as we've moved from ingredients to already prepared, ready to eat, this is perhaps just the next transition. The implication for a grocer is that now you're managing food availability as well as food service. And it's very different to kind of turn out a meatloaf and mashed potatoes on a regular basis than it is to, not to plug any particular company's name, but think of the frozen section and Stuffers, and you go and you nuke it and away you go that evening.
Yeah, Bill Yerda, what I keep reading too is that the grocery industry is one of really razor-thin margins in a lot of cases, except that there's a bigger margin in prepared foods or foods that you can actually eat in the store. And you're starting to see this not just in the sort of higher-end grocery stores that have a little cafe area, but even in grocery stores that aren't considered that sort of super high-end premium-type grocery store. So is that an area that groceries are actually making more money in, or are they just trying to compete with these, you know, home delivery kits and takeout?
No, I think that's a trend that started before the meal kit trend started. And you're absolutely right. Operating margins for a typical grocery store will be as thin as 1% to 3%. And so you're talking about an industry that generates, for the larger players, enormous volumes and razor-thin margins to try to squeeze out profit. One chain that isn't in Vermont, but some of your listeners are probably familiar with it, is Wegmans, and they figured this out a long time ago. And for those of you who have been to a Wegmans, or for those even who haven't, the way it's set up is, on one side it's a food hall, an entire food hall, and then to the left is your traditional grocery store. And this food hall, really, the idea is to drive, as you say, drive the higher margin bales. This is not unique to Wegmans anymore. Many stores do it. But that is absolutely the idea, particularly as pricing pressure increases because of stores like Aldi and another German discounter named Lidl entered the United States in 2017. And so with the entry of Lidl and the expectation that they would drive down prices, others lowered their prices. So Walmart, Target, Kroger, which is not in Vermont, but is a major national chain. And so these stores do need to find ways of supplementing their margins. And as it turns out now, I mean, you're right in mentioning that it's not even the fancy stores who offer these in-store dining experiences. It's really becoming table stakes. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing it, for example, a great example are the transitions of Price Chopper to Market 32. It's these stores are it's almost becoming table stakes that if you want to compete, you have to produce a customer experience that entices the customer to linger. It's not just about shopping. Yeah, if the local laws allow it, you could have a beer bar. You'll see wine bars. You'll see gelato in addition to in-store dining, and the food is actually really good. In some cases, to differentiate, a store will partner with a really popular local restaurant. Only locals will know that has credibility with local residents, and the fact that that restaurant is associated with a grocery store brings that credibility into the store. So that indeed is becoming a way of differentiating, getting customers to stick around longer, spend more money, and spend more higher margin money.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the Price Chopper and Market 32, and there is one of those in South Burlington in Vermont, and that's not typically an area in which I shop. I live in Addison County, but I went in a couple months ago, and it was like this sort of euphoric experience. You walk in, and it's like, oh my gosh, look at this place. And it's the same company, which is what's kind of remarkable too, is that it's this total transformation of what, you know, and this is a little disparaging, but it, you know, what sort of felt like kind of a dingy place, you just did your shopping there, to this place that looks gleaming and you think, yeah, I could stay here. I could sit down and eat a meal. And it's presented very differently. The packaging is very different. And so you do see not only this different kind of look, but a very different feel and experience when you walk in. And Rocky Lee, to your point, you know, this idea that you could bring your family for a meal at the grocery store, which, yeah, I guess, as you were saying, was anathema to your mother's generation, for example.
Right.
Let's go to Tina, who's calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Tina.
Hello. You?
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. I just had more of a point than a question, I guess. So I'm a postal worker, and I have an organic farm. So for me, it's kind of a mixed feeling because, you know, I'm delivering my pig shears on one hand to people because I feel like it's better to meet somebody at their house, drop it off, get to know them, kind of more personalization. Whereas in my other job, you know, I'm delivering, it's the one-click method where, you know, you're online and you're buying everything. So it's kind of a mixed emotion about the shopping experience in general, I guess, because it's good and bad in both ways.
Yeah. So, Tina, you're seeing it, I mean, that sort of personal delivery of your organic farm produce and then all of the things that you're dropping off for people that they've ordered online without that personal touch, even though they're both still coming to the home, it feels really different to you?
It's very different. Absolutely.
Does that affect how you make your own personal choices about where you buy groceries?
Absolutely. I like the personal feel, but it's just my personal preference. I want to know, you know, I want to, in a way, meet my bacon. I want to know where my vegetables come from. You know, I'm more apt to do research on, like, growing methods and everything, of course, because I'm farming. But I like that personal feel. There's more love in the food versus the opposite.
Hmm. Yeah, Tina, thanks for your call. I appreciate that perspective. Let's hear from Kathleen, who's calling in from Thetford. Hi, Kathleen. Where do you come in on this conversation?
Hi, Jane. I was interested to hear what Tina said because I have a similar perspective. When I was raising my children, and they're grown now, I became aware of how the food in the grocery stores was somehow a threat to their well-being, and I got a little bit anxious when I would go to a big box store or to a general grocery store where the food was not necessarily wholesome and healthy, and it was highly processed, and I was getting anxious. And that's when I started shopping in co-ops and learning more about food, food safety, and the wholesomeness of food. And so I'm grateful for the availability of high-quality food here in Vermont, and that's essential to me. So I'm not sure that the food services have those same values in terms of those really narrow margins and how they're able to bring forward, you know, healthy food, wholesome food at the same price point, you know, that I could go and get it myself. So
yeah, Kathleen, I appreciate that perspective as well. Thank you very much for adding it. And, you know, it's interesting, Bill Yerda was talking earlier about some of the things that consumers have demanded, and I think he mentioned local food is one. And Rocky Lee DeWitt, you know, you now see, even at the very largest chains, that they're often highlighting local food, local produce. So even at the ones where, you know, Walmart or Target, you'll see a section that says local, you know, because that's what consumers are asking for, as Kathleen was saying, knowing where their food comes from, and that increasing desire to support local farmers is one that even big box stores have had to accommodate.
Yes, and so the implication there is, what kind of discretion does the store manager in a national chain have with regards to making local purchases? And I think from the farmer's side, one also has to wonder what kind of reputation is construed by the decision to do business and have your produce featured at a Walmart or something that symbolically may not have the same notion of the consumer's definition of local. All right. So the good news is we are blessed in this country to have the kind of access to food we have. And we are really blessed as a country to have the latitude to be a discerning customer. It's within that context that a grocery store operator, whether it's the local mom and pop in a general store or it's the Walton family or the Wegman family, tries to understand who, in fact, is my clientele, how do I manage my product mix, my merchandise mix. And for things like a retrofit of a Price Chopper to a Market 32, That's not a small cost. I'm putting new tiling on the floor. I'm putting in a whole bank of refrigerators and freezers. What kind of repeat business can I generate so that I'm sure that I can pay off the investment that I've made in a low-margin business?
You know, there are other things to mention. When Trader Joe's built its first store in Vermont, one of the big conversations around that was how much local food would it have. Trader Joe's was really, seemed to say, we'll work with you as much as we can, but this is how our business model works. We don't have local food because, you know, this is how we're making sure that the prices stay low. So that question of, you know, business model and margins is one that certainly comes up again and again. And yet this weekend we hear Trader Joe's is going to be eliminating a lot of plastic packaging from its food in response to consumer demand. Alan in Meriden, New Hampshire, emailed in to say, as consolidation in the supermarket industry brings disruption near and far, cooperative food stores remain vibrant neighborhood grocers. As an employee of the Hanover Co-op with its stores in White River Junction, Hanover, and Lebanon, I see firsthand how our buyers seek out the latest trends to stay even and often one step ahead of chain stores. In fact, tomorrow, lead buyers from our co-op and others will be at Expo West in California to sample products in every category imaginable. As independent retailers, food co-ops are nimble and can get a product on the shelves without being slowed by corporate hierarchy. We are here to buy for our member owners and shoppers, not sell to them. Robin also emailed in about co-ops, saying Vermont food co-ops have a real impact in our state. impacts that are measurable and tell the story of how co-ops keep money local, support local growers and producers, and stay relevant to their communities through the local outreach they do in supporting organizations. Although, interestingly, I remember when my stepmother was a volunteer for the Middlebury Co-op, you know, 30 years ago, and she was cutting cheese. We don't see a lot of volunteers in there doing the actual packaging and production of food today in our food co-op. Some still do, Professor DeWitt, I'm sure, but not many, right? There's been a professionalization even of co-ops.
Yes, there's been a professionalization of co-ops, and in part that's really let's talk about a socially responsible mission. Are you better off creating employment opportunities for people in your community and then reducing your use of volunteers? I think the other thing that's happening is that there are so many opportunities for volunteerism. Are there others where you're more directly working to benefit the who you're providing services to? The co-op model is very, very interesting, right? And it's very prevalent in Vermont, not just in terms of at the store level, but certainly at the producer level too. And I think the challenge is always you have to make something in excess of what it costs you in order to keep the lights on at Middlebury Co-op or at City Market, right? You also, as a farmer, need to be able to get enough for what you're producing to allow you to buy fertilizer and run the tractor and deal with the vagaries of weather. The good news about food and retail is that we can't go without it. So there's always an opportunity to sell. The question is, what does it cost you to be able to sell?
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're looking at the grocery store picture in Vermont. A lot is changing in this low-margin industry. Keeping up with consumer demand is a crucial part of staying in business in the more populated areas of the state. And what about our rural grocery stores? We're talking today with Bill Yerda, a senior retail analyst at Boston Consulting Group. He now works from Ho Chi Minh City, but continues to focus on retail and grocery activity in the United States. And with Professor Rocky Lee DeWitt, a professor of management at UVM's Grossman School of Business. And we've been looking at all of these grocery stores and how they are changing, how they meet customer demand. Sarah Lafferty is the third-generation owner of White Market, which has three stores in St. Johnsbury and Lindenville. And Sarah said to us, quote, "I would say the most important thing we do to stay relevant is know our customers and stay nimble enough to be able to honor their requests. It takes a lot for a larger chain to listen to and process customer requests. We give our team the ability to try new items within days of a customer making a request. We've recently tried partnering with third-party digital coupon and online shopping companies to stay relevant in a world of smartphones because our customers were voicing interest in having access to them. We've also invested a lot in our stores in the last few years to make sure we are offering the cleanest, nicest shopping experience we can. We feel not investing in maintaining our stores and failing to make improvements because of a fear of growing costs and shrinking sales becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We also invest our time and money in our community and make sure we actively continue to make our community a place we want to live. I feel that by supporting our community over the last 55 years, our community slash customer base has always felt good about supporting us in return." So does that sound like something that you're familiar with, listeners? Or maybe you're in the business and you want to share your perspective with us. Again, 800-639-2211. Denny says, "I live in Rutland County. I shop first at Aldi and then at Hannaford. I don't buy prepared food because it's too expensive. My family rarely eats out or takes out due to cost. I'm grateful for Aldi because of low cost and lots of organic products, including produce. They don't carry Vermont products, but do carry New York products, which I consider local since New York is 20 miles from here." And BHA says, "I buy as much as I can from my local family-owned Georgia market. Some things I can find only at Healthy Living in South Burlington. Everything else comes from Hannaford. In the summer, I shop at the Saturday Farmers Market." And Megan says, "You know, there are places in the area where it's tough for folks to get groceries. For example, the closest grocery store in Winooski is Shaw's, up the hill and across from Costco. Unfortunately, folks without transportation have a tough time getting there. There's no bus service or sidewalk. Often these folks take a bus or van all the way to South Burlington to shop. I wish Winooski had an easier and more affordable place for food. Fortunately, there is a farmer's market there in the summertime. And Biliotta, you know, we were hearing for a long time about food deserts, and a lot of times these were in urban communities, but in rural communities, like most of Vermont, that can also be a problem. I mean, do we see that issue of food deserts, or if not deserts, food inaccessibility and difficulty changing?
We do. I believe we do. I mean, it doesn't mean it's resolved or close to being resolved, but we've mentioned Aldi a few times, and I think it's a great example of that happening. Aldi's a low-cost operator. They tend to locate their stores in less urban, more out-of-the-way areas to keep overhead costs down. And the fact that we're now seeing, it's common to see organic food in Aldi, and as the writer wrote in, that they carry food from New York, you know, which is 20 miles away, as we know. That's considered local, and that's a 1,000 plus chain of grocery chain operated out of Germany, and so I think that's promising. I think even beyond Aldi, we have dollar stores at least throughout the United States, and I apologize, I didn't familiarize myself with which ones are in Vermont. But I'm talking about Dollar Tree, Dollar General, those stores, and that's an example of what we call channel burning, where a store that didn't used to carry food has now really gone harder into food because food generates repeat customers, and so more visits to the dollar store than you would typically do. Once you start selling food and people get used to buying food there, they'll stop in every week or two. And again, they tend to locate their stores in more out-of-the-way rural communities. They keep overhead down. They keep prices extremely low. And there, too, they are increasingly putting in coolers, refrigerators, carrying fresh produce. It's not just shelf-stable product. And so we're definitely, as each of these chains looks for areas to grow and looks to drive revenues, they need to find new growth outlets. And there are these opportunities that used to be ignored that aren't ignored anymore. And so I do think that hopefully we see this continue to improve, not just to have food in these food desert areas, but healthy food and organic food. And the good news is we're seeing that. So because you live in an out of the way place, it doesn't mean you don't have access to at least some of that same quality food that others have.
You know, one of the other questions, and Rocky Lee, this is often in the more urban environments in Vermont, just because of population clusters, and certainly we see this outside of Vermont. You know, there are places like, say, South Burlington, where in one area there are now four grocery stores, and you can walk to each of them. I mean, they're within sight line of each other, and two of them have come in the last couple of years. So Target and Trader Joe's are new, Healthy Living, and then I think it's Hannaford is right across the street.
University Mall.
Yeah. So why? Why put stores all together? I mean, obviously they're competing against one another, but are they also thinking we offer different enough ideas of what a grocery store is that people might shop at all four of us rather than just competing against one another to get one customer who does all of his or her shopping there?
I think that in that particular illustration, it's important to go back and look at historically who's there and the order in which they got in there. All right, so the Hannaford had been there for a long time. The Healthy Living, right, was a move down the street from where they had previously been. And then you had the addition of Trader Joe's. So people, when they shop, want to go to a kind of standard location. And then if they cross-shop across the stores, that's not necessarily the case. It may be more likely that they're going to the Healthy Living and then going to the Pier 1 and then going up the street to the Barnes & Noble, whereas the Hannafords is on the other side of the street. You're not going to walk across the Dorset so that you can shop there. Very simply, we think of this area as urban, but it is certainly not urban like Rochester, New York, or Albany, New York. People in those locations would think of us as still rural in terms of that size. I think the important thing, if I would go back to Bill's numbers, are let's just do the math. $1.8 billion, 620,000 people. That's about a $3,000 spend per person per year. If you take a four-person household, you're talking about $12,000. If you take certain communities, $12,000 as a portion of that family's income is a very big amount of money. So I think the more we pay attention to just what part of the budget someone has to spend on food and how that's related to the time they have available to prepare food, we get a much better sense of the many different faces of food retailing in the state of Vermont and the value of different kinds of store practices, whether it's eat in the store or have an assortment of fresh fruits and vegetables or just have reasonably priced products that I can generate calories for my family with.
Yeah, and that we can ride around in that spaceship-themed grocery cart and then eat quickly because, you know, just got out of work and we got to get the kids fed and got to get home and got to get to bed and all the other stuff and maybe go to the second shift of work.
That's correct.
That's Rocky Lee DeWitt, a professor of management at the Grossman School of Business at UVM. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
And Bill Yerda is a senior retail analyst at Boston Consulting Group. Bill, thank you so much for staying up very late in Vietnam to talk with us. Appreciate your perspective.
Thank you.